But I don't know if there was a contest more entertaining than the one that featured Illyria and Vermillion. Tim Gebhardt of the Chronicle-Telegram was there, and he is here with us now. Tim, thank you so much for your time, my friend. How are you?
You're welcome, Bo. It's good to talk to you.
Well, let's take a look at that game last night. Boy, Illyria winning in the final seconds over Vermillion. Give us an idea as to what kind of a roller coaster ride that game was.
Well, for three quarters, Illyria pretty much dominated the game. I mean, they had an 18-point lead in the third quarter and still led 58-42 with about 4 minutes left in the fourth quarter. And that's when Vermillion's defense picked up its intensity. They started getting some steals. They ran off 10 straight points. They got it down to 58-52. Then Illyria scored a free throw and a layup and went back up 61-52. Then Mason Montgomery hit a three, and Jonah File hit a three. Illyria got a layup from Devian Williams. That made it 63-58. Montgomery came right back down and got another three. They called their last timeout. They turned the ball over. They got Illyria to turn it over, and Montgomery went in and laid one in with 17 seconds left to tie the game at 63. And then Illyria on a play in their forecourt, Robinson kind of lost control of the ball, or you know, he may have been fouled, may not have been fouled, I'm not sure, but Vermillion got the ball and had a chance to win it, and the official called Seth Hurd for an illegal screen. That's one of those calls with I'm sure Kurt Abermel was tearing his hair out over, and that gave the ball back to Illyria with 8 seconds left. Brett Lyric, the coach of Illyria, called a timeout, set up a play. Devian Williams took the ball out, threw it into Caleb Rogers, and Rogers got it back to Williams, and he streaked down the left side of the lane there and actually bobbled the ball a little bit. And then came back up with it and made a I don't think a layup is quite the term. It was one of those that he kind of pushed up from a few feet away from the basket and banked it in, and it went in with about 2 seconds left. Vermillion just didn't have enough time to come. They didn't have a timeout, so obviously they had to run the play, and they just didn't have time.
We'll come back to Illyria in just a second here, Tim, but I want to focus on the Sailors for just a moment because, you know, that's a team I think a lot of folks in the area don't necessarily get a chance to focus on a ton because they play so many games that are at schools that are pretty far away.
Right.
But this is a team that I think, especially in this area, might be considered a little bit underrated because of just how well they have played throughout the course of the entire season. Watching them last night, what are some of the things that the Sailors did that really stood out to you?
Well, I'll tell you, first of all, they're a veteran group. That they're starting five, and even a couple of kids coming off the bench, Reese Miller and Ethan Habermill, have been playing together for a long time. You know, they got the File brothers that play. This Mason Montgomery is just an outstanding player. They are very, very good at what they do, and they're good shooters. Last night, I think Kurt would be the first to admit their free throw shooting let them down a little bit. They were only 2-7, and their three-point shooting could have been a little bit better than it was. They were 5-19. That's what I had them, 5-19 last night. And they're normally a better shooting team than that. But, boy, that third and that fourth quarter, when they made their comeback, when they applied their pressure defense, they were very, very good. I've seen them probably three or four times this year, and they have been very impressive to me. They aren't real big, but they're big enough where they do very well on the offensive glass. Last night they scored 14 points off their own off their own misses, and actually controlled their glass pretty well. I think the teams were pretty even rebounding in the totals, but Vermillion did a much better job on their offensive end.
Tim Gebhardt of the Chronicle-Telegram is joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. And, boy, I know the top five rankings are a nice talking point for us every single week. And, you know, love them or hate them, it's always a good conversational piece. But last night's game gives us a ton to talk about as we get closer to Friday. How do you think last night's game will affect who we see in those top five rankings come Friday morning?
Well, obviously, I think you got to put Lorraine at the top. They have a victory over Vermillion, although it was only by 1 point early in the year. Lorraine has been playing very, very well. You know, coming into the year, I think Coach Rossitano over there would have been the first to admit, you know, he had an awful lot of people to replace, but they've kind of come together. They're, as he calls it, they have now established kind of a winning tradition over there at Lorraine, and they seem to pick it up each year, much as they did years ago when Admiral King had their pretty good run of teams. But so I would say they've got to be considered one of the top teams. Certainly Vermillion has got to be in the mix, although losing to Elyria, even though it was an incredible comeback, that's probably going to keep them out of, you know, the top spot or whatever. You got to think about Clearview. You know, smaller schools, you got to think about Clearview. You got to think about Wellington. Those two teams, I've seen them a couple of times. They're very, very impressive. I'll see Clearview again on Saturday. They get a chance against Elyria, in fact, at home. So that'll be interesting to see how that unfolds. And Elyria is not a bad team. They've had their last, they've lost up until last night. They had lost five in a row, but they've been without Justin Kapp for three of those games because he was hurt in the Keystone game. Took a kind of an elbow to the head or nose or face or whatever, and I'm not a doctor, and I'm not sure what the circumstances are. You know, they talk about concussion protocol and all that stuff. I'm not going to get into that. I'm not sure what that is with Justin, but he's been out, and he was on the bench last night, not dressed, but on the bench last night. I believe he'll be playing pretty soon for Elyria coming back, so that'll be a lift for Elyria coming up as they get closer to tournament time. Of course, they've got a big game against Solon on Friday. Solon is maybe the best team in Northeast Ohio. They're unbeaten. They're rated in the state. I think they're rated in the top three or four in the state, and they're rated in that Cleveland.com as the number one team. So that'll be a huge, huge test for Elyria on Friday before that Clearview game on Saturday.
You mean you're not a doctor? All this time.
I only play one on TV or radio.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you've definitely got your PhD in high school football and high school hoops. No question about that, my friend. That's why we keep bringing you back on. So maybe you don't have that white lab coat. Maybe you don't look the part, but you certainly speak the part and you certainly write the part. Again, we're talking with Tim Gebhardt of the Chronicle-Telegram here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. And, you know, getting to some of those other teams that have been discussed recently in the top five, you talked about some of the teams that have appeared there the last couple of weeks, you know, Clearview, well, they've rebounded really, really well after their first loss of the season. And that's a fun team to watch because, boy, they get up and down the floor. They play really well in transition. That full court pressure is a lot of fun to watch as well. But looking at some of the teams right now as well, Tim, that are kind of on the cusp. You know, you mentioned Wellington. That's a team that's kind of entered and then dropped out, and I think they've played well enough to kind of stay in the conversation. Who are some of the other teams that you think are on the outside looking in, but again, right there on the cusp of breaking the top five?
Well, you know, a team that I think is right now kind of floating under the radar a little bit, but they're very good, is Elyria Catholic. They've got a lot of talent over there. Their schedule has been just, you know, night in and night out. They play some of the best teams in the area. I just saw them against Cleveland Central Catholic last weekend. They played Cornerstone Christian before that. They played Lorraine. They're going to be playing Vermillion here coming up. They just take on all comers. I think Phil Cuchta, their coach, does it on purpose so that they get themselves ready for their Division III tournament. That's a team that's got a lot of talent, and I certainly wouldn't want to mess with them come tournament time.
Very good stuff. Well, one of the things that I think is so interesting about this time of the year is that Right around now, you start hearing about seeding. Now, there's still a lot of basketball to be played. We've still got about a third of the season left, maybe a hair less in some cases, but not everybody's on the same page because there are some schools that didn't play some games earlier in the year because the weather has certainly thrown a bunch of wrenches at us. But, you know, this has been an interesting season. Do you remember one like this where the weather has dictated so much?
Well, actually, I guess it's only because I've been doing this so long, there have been other years where there have been cancellations and games that have been backed up and some teams have had to play in two or three, almost an NBA-type schedule in a week's time because of the way that the games were postponed or canceled or whatever. You know, we had a week last week where Elyria had played on a Wednesday night, Lorain played on a Thursday night. You know, and normally they're also scheduled for the weekend, which they were. So, I mean, those things, I think in this part of the state, you got to kind of look at that as that's going to happen. It hasn't happened here in recent years, but yeah, that's happened before where games have been postponed and canceled and switched around or whatever. I can't remember a time where so many school closings were happening right around the holiday. You know, right after the holidays, the schools didn't get back in session for about another week, I don't think.
Well, and you're in touch with a lot of the coaches. What are some of the things you would hear from the coaches about the challenges that came out of that? And based on my conversations, they would always say, look, I mean, every school is different with the way they handle the amount of time that you were allocated to practice if school is postponed or if school is canceled altogether. And I think each coach would tell you something a little bit different. I mean, on the surface, they're conditioned to say, you know what? It's tough for everybody. We've got to find a way to battle through it, but it affects different teams and different coaches in different ways.
Well, I think you're right. I think that most of the coaches would say that you take a kid out of his normal routine, and that's not going to be good. I think it affects a team, for example, let's say Elyria, that has a lot of new varsity players on the team. It might affect them a little bit more than, say, a Vermillion that has a veterans team. They're used to playing with each other. They know kind of what they're doing. They pretty much, I think Kurt Habermill has got a great program over there with Vermillion where they kind of understand what their roles are and everything, and I think they can adjust to those type of situations, you know, maybe practicing at 6 a.m. or practicing at 6:30 at night or whatever the situation dictates because of the weather.
Yeah, and it is fascinating how that affects different teams differently. I know, you know, I was talking with Coach Hood at Westlake about a week and a half, two weeks ago, about how that affects him, and he said, look, you know, they've got restrictions there. When they cancel school, he only gets X amount of hours to mess with the kids and get them in the gym and get them to focus, and that's a hard thing to do. And I remember him telling me, I think they only had like an hour and a half or 2 hours with for the boys and the girls teams, and that's that's such a challenge, and that's all you've got for two teams.
Right, and especially, like I said, they probably dictate to them what time they can actually practice too, and that can be kind of iffy and touch and go also, depending on, you know, parents' schedules and kids' schedules and stuff like that. It's tough.
Yeah, no, it is a challenge, no question about it. Well, Tim, always a pleasure, my friend. We enjoy having you on as always, and we'll do it again soon.
Great. Thanks a lot, Bo. I always appreciate you calling and having me on.